Good morning. Then yesterday we spoke about how bodhisattvas were once ordinary beings like ourselves. They, in fact, were no different from ourselves in that their way of thinking, their priorities were very ordinary, just like our own. But how did they then train in order to give rise to the mind of bodhicitta, to arise as bodhisattvas? And this is what we started to look at yesterday, at the causes that need to be cultivated in order to give rise to the result that is the mind of bodhicitta. The first cause we looked at was that the bodhisattvas reflected on the freedoms and opportunities, or this precious human rebirth that they have attained. They saw that this resultant rebirth has come about in dependence on the accumulation of particular causes, and that those causes need to be repeatedly cultivated in order to ensure spiritual progression, or opportunities for spiritual progression continue to be found. And these causes were primarily that of ethical conduct, but this combined with the practices or the meditations on generosity, patience, and joyous perseverance. But having given rise to the wish to become a bodhisattva, whilst this wish wasn't uncontrived, was just a mere aspiration, the aspirant bodhisattva knew that in addition to these meditations, they had to reflect on the reality of samsaric existence, reflecting on the sufferings that pervade samsaric existence, those of the lower realms, but also those of the so-called happy migrations. reflecting on the state of samsara, they came to see that samsara itself has no essence. In other words, there's nothing worthwhile, there's nothing worthy of striving for in samsara. There's nothing worthwhile to achieve or attain that is still bound within samsara. And this meditation is done repeatedly, giving rise to the overwhelming aspiration to attain freedom from suffering, to attain freedom from samsara, to attain a state that has emerged from suffering, and gaining conviction or a definite wish to emerge from the sufferings of samsara. Having meditated successfully on this, they moved then to the next topic, which is the recognition that being trapped within the suffering realms of samsara but longing for freedom from it is something shared by all beings. It's not unique to any one individual. This is something that all ordinary beings long for: freedom from pain, freedom from suffering. And seeing this similarity between themselves and others, the aspirant bodhisattva turned their attention to others and saw how all beings are the same in wishing for happiness, wishing for freedom from suffering. And they developed this mind of impartiality, seeing that there really is no fundamental difference that one can point to between ourselves and others, in that we are all the same in longing for happiness. And with this basis of impartiality cultivated, then they proceeded to engage in the direct causes that lead to the cultivation of bodhicitta. And these we saw were two methods. And here the one is the six cause and one result method, the result being bodhicitta. So they start to cultivate the six causes, reflecting on the close and personal relationship that we have with all beings over the expanse of lifetimes. The beings have shown us direct kindness, such as being our caregiver, our primary caregiver, such as our parents, as well as indirect kindness in so many other roles, from lifetime to lifetime. And this then, built on the basis of impartiality, develops a feeling of closeness towards others. And in dependence on this, the second cause is then cultivated, that of reflecting on the kindness that others have shown us. Reflecting repeatedly on the kindness of others, giving rise then in dependence on that to the third cause, that of the wish to repay the kindness that others have shown. And this wish to repay the kindness of others, which comes about in dependence on the cultivation of the prior causes, when this grows within us, the thoughts naturally arise: may all beings experience only happiness. But knowing that happiness itself is a result that comes about in dependence on causes, here then the aspirant bodhisattva reflects: may all beings cultivate the causes for happiness. And those causes, namely being these practices of ethical conduct, generosity, patience, and joyous perseverance. And here the aspiration is: may all beings cultivate these causes so that they can experience results and happiness. And in this way, love is cultivated for all beings, because love is the wish: may all beings experience happiness. And then for beings to experience happiness, the aspirant bodhisattva knows that they can only experience happiness if they are freed from suffering. So therefore, the wish: may all beings be freed from suffering, the mind of compassion is cultivated. And here the aspirant bodhisattva knows that a state freed from suffering too is a result. So here the aspiration is: may beings avoid accumulating the causes of suffering, and may beings eliminate previously accumulated causes of suffering. And this comes about in dependence on cultivation of wisdom realizing emptiness on the basis of concentration. So here the aspiration is: may all beings cultivate these causes which lead to freedom from suffering. And when these two minds of love and compassion have been developed in a powerful manner, in a manner that pervades aspirant bodhisattva, naturally the wish will come that it's not enough that I just have a mere aspiration for others to experience only happiness and freedom from suffering and cultivate the relevant causes. Beings need assistance to achieve this. I take it as my personal responsibility, because it's not good enough that I have the mere aspiration that others experience happiness. I must become a skilled being so that I can lead others to a state freed of happiness. I see this as my responsibility. Whether others are experiencing happiness or suffering, this is my responsibility. And in this way, the altruistic attitude of universal responsibility is generated. But how to fulfill that? And this is where the six causes have now been cultivated. And bodhicitta is about to be generated. Bodhicitta is the mind that says, in order to fulfill this heartfelt wish, I have to become the most skilled of guides. I have to become a Buddha. Which means I have to strive single-pointedly to become a Buddha in order to benefit others, for the sake of others. And this is the generation of bodhicitta. In this way then, the beings that became bodhisattvas, when they were aspirants like us, they reflected in these ways, through all these varying steps, giving rise to bodhicitta. Bodhicitta having been generated, then they engage in these various practices that have already been meditated on and referred to, such as ethical conduct, generosity, patience, choice, perseverance, concentration, and wisdom, namely the six perfections. But here now, because they're conjoined with bodhicitta, they are perfections. And these are engaged in for the sake of others. So what we see here is that the aspirant bodhisattva, the ordinary being who would cultivate uncontrived bodhicitta and be counted amongst the children of Buddhas, first went through the various meditations that led to the mind of definite emergence. And on that basis, having cultivated those causes, they then engage in the steps that lead to the attainment of bodhicitta. For example, the six cause and one effect method. And thereafter, having generated bodhicitta, they embarked in the trainings of bodhisattvas, the six perfections. So this is how all bodhisattvas that abide in the world have trained. And that is the example that they set forth for us as aspirants to follow.
Mm-hmm.
电台里呀，俺听过前面去，你们去也来，但几位新人的个也不去，也不学，是那都是呢。俺没那么讲的，这些不学的，什么样子个？到底啊，这个你那里呀，的那个三大些机会的，这些不的，什么样子个？看上当啥样子机会的，的那些些活的，才叫看上地方去。
What we just covered now, recapped now, was that the bodhisattvas in this world, in order to fulfill this aspiration of theirs and become bodhisattvas, they trained in a specific manner. They first started out by reflecting in great detail on the reality of the situation that samsaric beings, that ordinary beings are experiencing, coming to understand that samsara itself has no value, that everything that we long for and desire has no real value, and that we, as long as we remain bound within the realms of samsara, we will stay confused and deluded by our ignorance, valuing things of no essence, putting our mental energy, our physical and verbal energy into striving to achieve things that have no real lasting value. Coming to see this delusion and coming to see the cost of this delusion, all the pain, the misery and the suffering that beings experience because of this, the aspirant bodhisattva starts to give rise to this overwhelming wish to be freed of the pain of samsara and to make all required effort to turn away from what keeps one bound, turn away from the delusion and the confusion, the striving for things of no real importance, but to rather put all one's energy into the practices that will lead one to definitely emerging from the suffering realms of samsara. And in this way they give rise to the mind of definite emergence. And as this grows within them, in the same meditations they move on to reflect that this isn't a case just for themselves, but it's a case for all other ordinary beings. Give rise, and then they, with this recognition, they cultivate the mind of impartiality, and those six causes we just heard about, reflecting on the intimate relationship we have with others, their kindness and so forth, cultivating love and compassion, and eventually bodhicitta itself. So this is how all those beings who are bodhisattvas in the world trained in order to give rise to bodhicitta. And they did so with this understanding that prior causes need to be cultivated completely in order to give rise to the desired results. This dependency was clear to them. And having given rise to bodhicitta in their meditation session, they would then lastly meditate on the six perfections. So when we hear this sequence, how should we relate to this? What meaning should we take from this? For those beings that are our role models in our life, we should emulate them. We should understand that they have set forth their trainings for us to emulate. Hence texts such as these have been composed. So therefore, wanting to give rise to the self-same result that they have achieved, we should practice in exactly the same way that they did. This is the complete and unmistaken path. We meditate on the faults of samsara in order to give rise to definite emergence. We combine this meditation with the six cause and one effect method in order to give rise to bodhicitta. This is how they are trained, and we should follow this example. So therefore, to do this, just like they did, we should rely on our spiritual teacher's advice. And this points to what we also covered yesterday. We need in order to rely on our spiritual teacher's advice, we need to hear that advice. In other words, hear teachings. Not occasionally, but continuously. And not just hear these teachings or study them and cultivate intellectual knowledge, but we need to reflect on them. Coming to see their validity, see how they apply to us, and start to change our way of thinking. And in this way, through hearing and reflecting, cultivate the perfect basis for meditation. And moreover, as we also saw yesterday, in order to continue our spiritual progression from lifetime to lifetime, we need to cultivate the causes that will result in good rebirths. These causes of ethical conduct, primarily combining this with meditations and practices of generosity, patience, and joyous perseverance, and then those four combining with prayer. Prayer that may I attain the best possible rebirth in the best possible circumstances so that I can continue my spiritual progression. I can continue to become an ever more developed spiritual being and be of ever more benefit to others. And in order to do this, may I not merely attain a good rebirth, but may I have an aspiration for the pure Buddha Dharma. May I meet a Mahayana spiritual friend, recognize his qualities, come under his care, receive his teachings, and wholeheartedly commit to hearing teachings, reflecting on them, and meditating on them. So this is the way that the Bodhisattvas train, and this is the example that we should emulate. And this is then what we covered yesterday. As we heard then yesterday, in order to actually cultivate bodhicitta, this is not something that any being can even give rise to the wish to do, let alone be able to do so. One needs a suitable basis, and this basis is something that we all have received, or all have attained, namely this precious human rebirth. Not just an ordinary rebirth, a human rebirth, but a rebirth that is marked by the 18 qualities of the freedoms and opportunities. And it's that that makes this rebirth precious. And it's precious because of what it can achieve. So this is something that we have achieved, and we need to ensure that lifetime after lifetime we continue to achieve such a suitable basis in order to generate bodhicitta, in order to continue to strengthen our bodhicitta and our other spiritual qualities. And how to do so? Well, in brief, as we've heard, we need to cultivate definite emergence and the practices of the six causes that lead to the one result of bodhicitta. This is the unmistaken method. Today then, we'll continue in the text, and we'll come to look at the next verse, which starts with the presentation that when engaging in spiritual practice with a goal of great value, such as that of bodhicitta, undoubtedly one will encounter obstacles. And these obstacles need to be transformed, need to be overcome. We need to have as favorable circumstances as possible to make it as easy as possible for us to cultivate these minds of great value. But no matter how good our circumstances are, we will have obstacles. So, twofold. One, having as favorable circumstances as possible. And secondly, when we do encounter obstacles, as will come, we need to transform these, overcome these skillfully. So this brings us then to the second training of bodhisattvas, abandoning one's home. This brings us then to the second verse, or the second training. Attachment for loved ones agitates like a torrent of water. Anger for enemies rages like a blazing inferno. Ignorance's darkness obscures what must be cultivated and discarded. abandoning one's home is the practice of bodhisattvas. Generally, in the world, when we hear a term such as abandoning one's home, then for most people this would mean not staying in an environment that is filthy, in an environment where there are many illnesses, where there are many unfavorable circumstances, where one cannot live happily, and rather abandoning such a place, leaving such a place, and going somewhere which is beautiful, which is clean, which has what one would consider favorable circumstances, and also where one would be surrounded by a kind-hearted community. So this is generally in the world what is meant by abandoning one's home. So whilst that is the general meaning, this is not what we should be thinking here. In our case, the meaning is a bit different from this. The meaning of an unfavorable dwelling place, an unfavorable environment in our situation is primarily about, does one's environment aid or hinder the attainment, the cultivation, the development of spiritual goals? The place where we happen to find ourselves, the particular dwelling or the community or the area that we are in, does it aid the cultivation of definite emergence? Does it aid the cultivation of love, compassion, those crucial causes for the development of bodhicitta? In other words, the place we find ourselves, are there the favorable circumstances to hear teachings, to reflect on the teachings, and to meditate on these teachings? The ideal place, the home that we should be seeking out, is a place where that minimizes obstacles to the cultivation of bodhicitta. rather we should be seeking a place where the circumstances are favorable to hear teachings, reflect on them, to meditate on them, to meditate on the suffering nature of samsara, on the six cause and one effect method, the equalizing and exchanging self and others method, and thereby a place that is favorable for the cultivation of bodhicitta. That is what we are aspiring for. And that place itself, it may have certain characteristics in terms of the solitude and the beauty and the kind of community, but one is specifically thinking about the cultivation of a mind such as bodhicitta.
Kingen gari yungkure senada nganjugi chue nyamlen chewa la ngejung da anjunje menga dyu chajusum kye ge tone gunje menga dyungi la nyamlen cheba la bashe gari gari yungkure sen cheba na disor da soso peyu le de ba ina ma juge soso lumba de ye ba peyu de ba ina soso pama punya nyen se soso joba nangsa mangu yoro da yo wa da an de le de ba ina gari yungkure sen nyen yi chola 对,下去到了,哟,是不是?这三,所以说,帕玛当,奔家当,安尼所以说,卓巴拿着来,这种月白人,这种月白人,安尼得了呀,安尼,哦,你帕玛,俺就给了,别,这,得了,瞧吧,蒙不记得了,这瞧吧,蒙不记得了,安尼,你给瞧不给,那么样给,你来个,瞧不给,忘都送去呢,俺就确实也没见过,不然给买,你把钱了,是不是?
Then what are some of these obstacles that hinder or impede our cultivation of mind such as definite emergence and engaging wholeheartedly in practices such as the six cause and one effect method and equalizing and exchanging self with others? Well, these are presented here in this verse. We see at the beginning attachment for loved ones. So when you think about abandoning one's home, this is referring to a place where we are surrounded by our close friends, family, and people for whom strong attachment easily, naturally arises. And the fault here is the ease with which strong attachment arises within us. The fault's not so much with the person or the people to whom it arises, but it's that it arises so easily in us. And when attachment arises within us, attachment serves to obscure our way of thinking. It deludes us. And this delusion, these obscurations, these hinder our practice. They obscure our true motivation. They obscure our wisdom. They make it very difficult to develop qualities such as impartiality. And thereby, if one of these beginning minds is not developed, the latter ones cannot be developed. So therefore, it's because of the ease of the arrival of strong attachments that such places, one's home, is seen as a grave impediment to the cultivation of definite emergence and bodhicitta. For us as aspirants to the Bodhisattva paths, we are clearly beginners. We are beginners in the cultivation of the Bodhisattva paths. And that means when we look at what naturally arises within our minds, we will see that the afflictions arise with great ease. And those afflictions not only arise with great ease, but we grasp at them, they dominate our mind without any difficulty. Correspondingly, wisdom arises with difficulty, it doesn't last, it is easily lost, so too do the other antidotal minds to the afflictions. So because of this problem that we have, or this weakness that we have as beginners, that afflictions arise with ease and abide, the antidotes, we have very little familiarity with them, we struggle to generate them, we struggle to keep them present in our minds, we then are in this position that we see in the first line of this verse. Attachment for loved ones agitates like a torrent of water. Due to a strong feeling of closeness to our loved ones, friends and family, then attachment arises readily within us. It almost could be said to be ever-present within us. And then under the influence of this attachment, we engage in a wide number, or our mind becomes very distracted by this attachment, due to this attachment. And therefore, we readily follow this mind of attachment, thinking, oh, I need to assist them, I need to aid them, I need to help my loved ones, my companions. And whilst assisting others, helping others is, of course, a good thing to do, the problem here is that because of the dominance of attachment, our virtuous minds are obscured. We remain deluded, and therefore this attachment distracts us from having a balanced Dharma practice. It distracts us from prioritizing our Dharma practice. It distracts us from ensuring that we cultivate our Dharma practice as well as engage with others. So this is the great problem of our attachment. We have strong, when we live around people that we love and care for dearly, then we have many habitual ways of interacting with them, and these lead to our emotions for them growing ever stronger, and thereby our distractions for them, distractions towards them. And this obscures our wisdom and serves as an obstacle to the cultivation of our Dharma practice. It ensures that we have, our mind is often in a place of turmoil. We have many worries. And these serve to, again, to impede our ability to cultivate the minds of the Dharma. And about this point, there's often quite some confusion, because it's good to help others. We know we should be helping others and assisting them. And then, so the confusion comes to thinking, well, these people who I have a good connection with, who show me kindness, and I have a good relation with them, should I not help them? Should I not be there for them? Should I not work and earn a living so that I can financially support them? Should I not give my time to them and help them ease their burden by showing them friendship, chatting to them, and assisting them in various ways? Surely this is a good thing to do. To resolve this genuine quandary that is very common, let's think of if we happen to find ourselves in a situation where someone offered to give us a kilogram of silver or a kilogram of diamonds. So we have two bags, they weigh the same, they're both equally easy to carry, but we can only have one. So we offered one of these. So certainly, if we were to take that kilogram of silver, this would be something that we could sell for a great amount, and this would be very beneficial. But we all know that that kilogram of diamonds is of far greater value. So therefore, it would be a very easy decision. We'd all choose that one bag, that bag of a kilogram of diamonds, and rather take that. So similarly here in this situation, be aware of the function of attachment. We will see that in situation, attachment obscures our wisdom, prevents our wisdom from shining through, and leads us to making decisions based on the deceptive mind of attachment rather than clear wisdom. And the deceptive mind of attachment will with ease convince us that we need to help people. This is the goal of bodhisattvas, is benefit others, and here are people who in this life have shown me so much kindness and who have been there for me so many times. I need to be there for them. It's wrong to turn away from them, and I should use them as a basis for developing a bodhicitta. That is how attachment obscures us. Rather, when we see that the relationship that we have with these beings is only in one life, whilst they have shown us so much kindness, so too, in the same ways, have all other sentient beings, have all other beings. They too have shown us tremendous kindness. Maybe not in the same way in this one life, but they certainly have over the stream of lives. And when we think like that just for a moment, our attachment starts to subside because our wisdom is rising. We think further that it's through continuing to put our energy into caring for primarily or solely our loved ones of this life, that we continue to have this disturbed mind, many worries and concerns, these ordinary concerns of daily life. And the problem of these worries and concerns is that, as we know, they dominate our way of thinking, leaving very little space for us to be able to concentrate on anything else. And we know how, when we're receiving teachings and we're reflecting on these teachings, how our mind is not stable, it is not weak, it's easily distracted to these concerns and worries. And therefore, our cultivation of virtuous mind, such as definite emergence, love, compassion, bodhicitta, these are all very weak because of our lack of mental strength. And we lack mental strength because our mind is overwhelmed by ordinary, mundane worries and concerns. And therefore, it's until we turn away from this mundane way of thinking, our daily turmoil and worries, that we will not be able to develop the strength of mind that will enable us to develop truly worthwhile qualities within us. And then, until we develop the great qualities of the minds of the Buddha Dharma, our ability to be of benefit to others will remain exceptionally weak. Whereas if we do turn away from being so deluded by attachments, confused by attachments, until we do so, our mind will stay weak. But when we do, we will then have the mental space to develop a powerful, stable mind, develop qualities of the Dharma within us. And then we will be able to aid a great number of kind mother sentient beings and aid them in a way that is truly meaningful, aid them in the way that they really need. So this will only come, though, when we turn away from our daily concerns and preoccupations. The first obstacle then that pervades one's experience whilst living in an environment that is not ideal for development, for spiritual development, is that of attachment. The second is that of anger. And this we see in the second line. Anger for enemies rages like a blazing inferno.
Kihi shesan tuyas maribwe kienjine, anin namsa kongrala anche paa kongrala. Ata chik 我找我家的经经啊，举个例子，比得读起来是卷卷起来的，马恰马恰的，那个，那马吉瓦让也马吉瓦，让先什么马吉瓦吃的，那个我的，实际上，这说呢，就给人们吃了，把吃的也是我的。
Was living in circumstance in an environment that is not ideal for spiritual development. Not only does attachment easily arise and obscure us, but through the arisal of attachment, anger too arises with great ease. So when we, for those for whom we are attached, our loved ones, those that we feel part of our group, those that we identify closely with, so our family, our friends, our group, our society, when we see people harming them or deceiving them, taking advantage of them, immediately turmoil arises, frustration, anger, annoyance arises within us. When we see others harming those that we care about, or working against the interests of those that we care about, or putting them down, taking advantage of them. Any of these leads to the arisal of anger within us because of our attachment for those that we care for. And likewise, attachment anger arises too when we are harmed directly, when others take advantage of us or harm us in some other way. Anger arises so easily. Anger arises when things don't go the way that we want, when things that we desire are not achieved. Then we get frustrated, annoyed, and angry. This is all exacerbated when we are living in a place that is not conducive to Dharma practice, that is not ideal for Dharma practice. Because when anger or even a milder form such as annoyance or frustration arises within us, the afflictions are dominant, and we then become remain distracted by this life's mere concerns. And then, therefore, the mental space that is available to reflect on the Dharma is greatly reduced. And as long as we remain in an environment where the afflictions continue to arise with such ease and we struggle to apply the antidotes effectively, this life gets wasted through being dominated by concerns of this one mere life. And we see this how easily we get upset when someone merely looks at us or says words to us that we don't, looks at us in a way we don't like, says words to us we don't like to hear, or even uses a tone that we find unacceptable, whether directed at us or our loved ones. And that, merely that, can dominate our mind for hours or even days. We can hold resentment about that for weeks, months, or even years. And if we are finding ourselves in this position, we can recognize that we are beginners. We can recognize how difficult it is for us to cultivate and sustain minds of the Dharma within us. And as long as this remains so difficult, to give rise to realizations remains almost impossible.
Tasumba dila langdur chepi timu muna chens. Jisa dini jisa langdur chepi timu muna chens sidi karsu korsene. Jisa tangana zuge peyul duba na susuge nyen chua la ane chakwe kinye chapa mangdu jen namya che. Ane chiki susuge magasa dan susuge pama dan nyen dan de zuge chiki nama marzus magasa dili ya kongro che ane namya che du che du tangana zuge langdur ge nye de haku go marz kare che ne yaga re ma meba soga ya de bang goya de kare nyamlin che go de kare se shing go marz che tangana zuge kare che was tangana zuge de sha kongro 맞아 뇽모베르 깨바이네 디스파 빵자레 디스지기 오니시네 디스 빵 디빵고고레 진짜 니기 라신이가 타마라야 강아테야 차고레 안디 마세 디니기 뇽모베 콘트케네 디왕게 콘트케와 디왕게 레 나바사 디왕게 깨와치마 마선케네 동아 빠도메 바 뇽와 차와 디스 빵고고레 빵자레에서 하고 고르바 땅아도 냠스 레에시 빵 lang doro se lang se doro se di ba doro go doro me ba so ga di so lang se de ngam su nyam su lang go di ka re la na ta ngam su nyam su lang go di ta de ngejung kom ya 아니지 lunga yusum nyeche tumi tsurum soyaare, suybe nyamlan chayare, jimbe nyamlan chayare, ane kowala ngejung gomyaare, ane deji nganzo chashusum kiyayake maashi jinen jinso yunga chamba chashusum gomyaate, jesu nyamso langgo yade chakorwa. Chesan deneki langdoro ki karakara chigiyewe, nyamso langgo yade kare, pangko yade kare sayade, shingo wa maares, nganzo ki shi deha goyen, nam ye chepe le di ya pore di ya ko mare lang go ya di re dor go ya di le ni ye chepe ge nam chi ge sherap de ma do gi go mare di ge ma do ga re lam na so su ge nam ye ge wang ge de che ge wang ge so su ge phom pu ge chol pa de che ge wang ge le ga ta ma nam ye che ane kho ro wang ge sha le ta sim ji ge wang ge nam ye chi kho zin chue che le go ga ye wo ma nian ye chue che ge mo zin ye nian ge chue xu ye ge go bla ge wo ma chue xu ye go ma ra ba na ane ngana zuki di che wala di dhiri shi nyamlan che ta da hao gu 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 maare, pang che di re, lang che di re sa hao gu 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 maare. Che sa ha mokho wa yin za, ane ngana zuki pe nakto mra nuhu na na rana re si wala. Che sa lang dhur ki nye di ya gu shing tu gu gu maare che re.
Looking at the third line, ignorance's darkness obscures what must be cultivated and discarded. The ignorance referred to here can be understood in many ways, but the best way to understand it in this context is that both attachment for our loved ones, anger sometimes towards our loved ones, often towards those who we perceive as harming our loved ones or ourselves, those afflicted minds of such as attachment and anger, they serve to obscure us. They serve, because of the dominance of these afflictions, they serve to obscure our wisdom. And this is reflected in the second part of the line. Obscures us from what must be cultivated and what must be abandoned. So when the afflictions arise within us, we then are obscured from applying the antidote. So we may well have heard many teachings and have a clear idea of what the antidotes are to particular afflicted minds. But when those afflicted minds have arisen within us and we're dominant by them, that doesn't come to mind. What we're rather thinking about is the faults of others, or are we deceived by the desire wanting to achieve something. So here our mind is completely in a mundane way of thinking. We're not thinking about the antidotes that need to be applied. And even if we struggle and we try and turn our mind towards our Dharma training, it doesn't come to our mind with any strength because of the overbearing role of the afflictions, or the overwhelming strength of afflictions within us. This again shows that we are beginners. This also serves to ensure that our desired happiness is not achieved. Rather, we continue to experience unhappiness right now, suffering right now, and acting under the influence of these afflictions, allowing them to dominate, becoming ever more habituated to them, we accumulate negative karma, which will ripen in suffering in our future lives. So the position we find ourselves in when we are being dominated by these afflictions is that even if we know what should be cultivated, we struggle to do so. And even if we know what should be discarded, we struggle to do so. We know that what should be cultivated, as we've been hearing, is we should be receiving teachings on definite emergence and meditating on that. We should be restraining our body, speech and mind, ensuring that it remains ethical. Our way of thinking, acting and behaving should be ethical. We should cultivate a generous attitude, a patient attitude. We should be meditating on the six causes that lead to the cultivation of bodhicitta. So these are what should be cultivated. But as long as we are obscured by our afflictions, it's very difficult to apply these. And likewise, what should be discarded, we know this. These are the afflictions. But when they're dominant within us, it's very difficult to apply the antidote. And why is this so? It's even when we're receiving teachings, when we're hearing, if the afflictions are strong, we're not really hearing what is being taught, because our mind is rather distracted by what others have said, harm given to our loved ones, or our desire for to have things go our way, to achieve certain things. In other words, our mind is distracted by the afflictions. And therefore, when we do have an opportunity to receive teachings, that opportunity is largely lost. Likewise, when we're reflecting on the teachings, our mind is distracted by what we desire, distracted by what we want to push away, what we are averse to. So this is where we see the fault of remaining in circumstances that are not suited, that are not ideal for the cultivation of the Dharma.
Langdoros. That is like Jebi said, six to a Jebi said. Jebi said, Karsuras in a Chesa, Manoj, Gabrielia, and Kondogene, Yamunus and Be Samuel Jungrua, the Gabriel Yungre, the Gangati, the New Sambe Yungre. Chesa, Manoj, you get lagging in the Miji, be shed up the Mago Mevaza, the Shimman of Gomshi Mevaza, and just how the temper to get Jedu is, I'm some temper Jedu is. Chesa, and you get temper Dienje, and then Manoj, Munich and Manoj, or that Korosana, Rala, Nugget, Shannon, Nugget, Yakuomare, say, temper to keep hard.
The term here that we have translated as ignorance, there are several words for ignorance. This one can also be translated as confusion. So if you can think about it as ignorance darkness or confusion's darkness, gives a clearer understanding of what is being referred to here. Because the ignorance or confusion that is being specifically referred to here is what one experiences due to the arisal and the dominance of afflicted minds. And the reason that our afflictions arise within us with such ease and they abide for so long is because of our lack of familiarity to what must be cultivated and what must be discarded. Our lack of habituation to the virtuous minds that need to be cultivated and our skill in discarding the afflictions. And this we can see in terms of the strength of our mindfulness. If a practitioner has strong mindfulness, they will not have these difficulties. If mindfulness is weak, the afflictions will dominate and the application of the antidotes will be weak and sporadic. And we see that if a practitioner has developed the mindfulness well, they're skilled, if they are particularly skilled, they will notice through their mindfulness, when they are in a situation of danger, in a situation of danger being where, in this is the kind of situation that I know anger can easily arise. I know myself well. This is a situation of danger where attachment can easily arise. And with their mindfulness, then they can easily apply antidotes through noticing when anger or attachment starts to arise. A practitioner of slightly less capacity may not notice when they are in a situation of possible danger, but they will notice when their mind is starting to go in the direction of anger, when it's starting to go in the direction of attachment. And they will have no doubt about the danger of anger and attachment, and therefore will readily, wholeheartedly apply the antidotes. So such a practitioner is in a very different situation. They are not so easily obscured by the ignorance of darkness, because they know what must be cultivated and discarded and have great experience of this. Ourselves, though, we see how weak our mindfulness is, how easily those we don't recognize when we are in a situation of potential danger. We don't recognize when the afflictions are starting to arise. And then it's when they are strong and dominant within us, we're not even thinking about the antidotes. And the reason is because our wisdom has been so obscured by ignorance's darkness, or by confusion's darkness. So through the arisal of the afflictions, such as attachment and anger, ignorance, darkness obscures our Dharma knowledge, our Dharma training. Term darkness. This should be understood not as, say, the twilight in an evening, but rather when we're outside and it's pitch black. There are no stars visible, no moonlight, it's pitch black. And if we then have to walk somewhere, even if it's a path we know a little bit, but if it's pitch black and we don't have a torch, it's very difficult to find the path, let alone stay on it. We're likely to experience many some obstacles and pain, maybe walking on uneven ground, maybe falling into some water. So this we perhaps we know and we have some experience of. And why the term darkness is often joined with ignorance is it shows the function of ignorance in that it obscures our wisdom. Wisdom is often likened to light. So in this analogy, it would be a torch. But when ignorance is powerful, it completely extinguishes, when ignorance is powerful, it completely extinguishes the torch of wisdom. And that means one wanders about lost and confused. Why so? Because But the virtuous mindset one has cultivated, his don't even come to mind. The non-virtuous mindset one knows one needs to abandon. This wisdom, this knowledge, this too doesn't come to mind. So when we are under the influence of the afflictions, our mind does not readily turn to the virtuous mindset we have cultivated. It does not turn to the antidotes that we should apply to eliminate the afflictions. Rather, under the influence of these afflictions, they serve as a ripening condition so that we suffer right now. And these afflictions are ripened within us. We are suffering right now. Moreover, they create the causes that will ensure that we suffer in the future. And being under the influence of the afflictions doesn't only harm us. Their mere presence, let alone when you act under their influence, harms those around us. And through the impeding of our spiritual development, it harms others indirectly in the future lives as well. This is an important point to reflect on, coming to see that the afflictions are only harmful. Attachment only harms. Anger and ignorance only harm. And they harm us both now and in our future lives. They harm others both now and in our future lives. They serve to impede our desire to spiritually develop, to cultivate the minds of the Buddha Dhamma. Attachment for loved ones agitates like a torrent of water. Anger for enemies rages like a blazing inferno. Ignorance, darkness, obscures what must be cultivated and discarded. The aspirant bodhisattva coming to realize this, gain great clarity on this, then readily, as we see in the fourth line, abandons one's home, is the practice of bodhisattvas. Having come to understand the grave danger of the afflictions, and that under the influence of the afflictions only harms one. Then, and only harms one in that it impedes the cultivation of a quiet mind that must be developed, such as definite emergence and bodhicitta. Then the aspirant bodhisattva turns away from these adverse circumstances. They turn away from their home, they abandon their home. It's important that one sees the sequence here of meditations. The result is that one abandons one's home, but one does so because of the cultivation of the prior causes. The prior causes being a clear recognition of the danger of the afflictions, not just in the immediate term, but the long term. And primarily here, the danger of the afflictions is that it prevents one's spiritual development. So therefore, when one's home is abandoned, that bodhisattva, the aspirant bodhisattva, is not moving away for a quieter life, a bit of peace of mind from all the worries and difficulties of worldly life. That is an attitude of the self-cherishing mind. Rather, with wanting to transform themselves, become a being of incomparable beauty, a being of incomparable benefit to others, they turn away from their home in order to develop themselves spiritually, in order to receive teachings and to meditate on them, to come under the care of their spiritual friend and apply themselves completely to his teachings. In other words, to hear teachings on definite emergence and bodhicitta, and to cultivate them wholeheartedly, to reflect and meditate on them wholeheartedly. So that is the objective, or the motivation for abandoning one's home. And it's also done with the recognition that this is something that they will do for now. Once bodhicitta has been developed and is stable within themselves, at that point, what needs to be cultivated will have been cultivated to a point of stability. The skill in applying the antidotes to what must be discarded, that too will be developed to a large degree within themselves. And at that point, the bodhisattva, with stable realizations, will readily return to their home, to re-enter society, because then they will not, their virtuous qualities will no longer be overcome by mundane life, but rather, not only will they not be overcome, but they will, the bodhisattva then will be able to use what were prior obstacles, which were previously obstacles to the cultivation of the minds of the Dharma, will now, the bodhisattva now will be able to transform them. Our bodhisattva will be able to transform those same circumstances into ever stronger minds of the Dharma, and whilst doing so, be of true benefit to others.
对象控制了我们上一圈圈的人家们也不接触嘛的其实人家当部各部人家就怕他人时间的培育了怕他人时间讲人时间的时候然后确实跟那么给微信人有时候电影把亲戚确认的结果的时候培育帮助的人家当部的了人家们接触各部当部人家们接触各部人家就恰当叫人家老外人家你见识人家们也不用途的培育了他人时间的人家们结果的时候的
It's important to understand what is meant in this verse because it can be easily misunderstood. What is not being abandoned is one's loved ones. Rather, the aspirant bodhisattva, in order to develop true love for all sentient beings, a love that is free from partiality, free from attachment, with such a motivation, the aspirant bodhisattva turns away from adverse circumstances that hinder the cultivation of a love that is free from partiality and attachment, turns away from these adverse circumstances by leaving one's home, changing one's circumstances, and going somewhere where circumstances are favorable for the cultivation of bodhicitta, a place where one can hear an abundance of teachings, and through relying on one's spiritual teacher, reflect, meditate on those teachings, transforming one's way of thinking, cultivating all the virtuous minds, abandoning the afflicted minds. And then, when bodhicitta has been generated, and the being now is a bodhisattva, and bodhicitta is stable within her, she is then ready to return to society, return to her community. And not only ready to do that, but will want to, because what is the goal of a bodhisattva? It's to benefit others, and benefit others directly in a way of great meaning. And therefore, when the being is now a bodhisattva, she'll want to be in society again, directly helping others, directly being of benefit to others. Hence, abandoning one's home is the practice of bodhisattvas.
ဒီနေ့ကဒါငါတို့ကချွေညာတဲ့တန်ချေဒီနေ့ကလည်းကောင်းထုတ်ထုတ်ပဲကြည့်ရတယ်တန်ငါတို့ကပြေလင်းတို့အတဲဒီငါကြည့်ပွန်ကြရဲ့ကြည့်ပတ်တဲ့ရောဟုဆက်တဲ့ဘာမဲ့ကြည့်ကြည့်ရောဟုတဲ့ဒီချွေညာဒီစုမင်းတို့ဆက်အော်ဒီနေ့ကကြည့်ချွေညာသိချင်တဲ့ငါတို့ကြည့်ချွေညာတဲ့ပြမစကြည့်ချင်ပါလေစမောရဒါဒီနေ့ကြည့်ကြိုရဲဆက်ငါတို့ကလပ်ကြလဲဒီတဲ့တန်ငါတို့ကလည်းညီနေညီနေစမ်း
When Togme Zangpo composed this text, he was writing from his own experience. He's writing here exactly how he and all beings who were to go on and become bodhisattvas have trained. And he wrote this for the benefit of ourselves. The advice that he's giving to us here in the second practice of bodhisattvas is that recognizing that you want freedom from pain, that you want lasting happiness, you need to come to understand clearly the sufferings of samsara. And that means coming to understand the role that afflicted minds play in your life and how they cause all your pain, all your misery, every unwanted condition that comes about, every unwanted experience is due to your afflicted minds. We see this referred to here in this verse. So this is what we need to reflect on. Reflecting on this well, in that same session we apply this to the situation that others are in. And this then is the basis for them to, in the same meditation, to go on to reflect on the six causes and one effect method and give rise to bodhicitta in that meditation. When the wish arises within us, the wish of great sincerity arises within us to actually give rise to bodhicitta, to become a bodhisattva for the sake of all beings. And we have the understanding that in order to do so, we have to give rise to definite emergence first. And in order to do so, we need to be in the best of circumstances because of our weakness of familiarity to these virtuous minds and our strength of familiarity to the afflicted minds. We will then want to abandon one's home, but to do so in the footsteps of the bodhisattvas, sharing their motivation. We will see that the fault of being in our current environment is not the fault of the people around us, but it's the fault of the dominance of our afflicted minds within us. And it's due to these that we grasp with desirous attachment, or grasp with attachment at our loved ones, and anger arises so easily when they are harmed or when we are harmed, and therefore we have no partiality in our mind, but we divide beings into those that we are attached to and those that we are averse to and those that we are indifferent towards. And as long as that remains dominant within us, we will not be able to develop bodhicitta. So therefore, for the sake of all beings, ourselves and others, for happiness in this and future lives, one leaves one's home. One goes to where our teachers abide in order to receive teachings, to hear many teachings, reflect on them, and meditate on them. And do so with the commitment that I will strive wholeheartedly at this until I've given rise to uncontrived bodhicitta and it's stable within me. Then I can return loving all beings with a love that's free of attachment, free of partiality. So in this way, through reflecting what's presented here, Togme Zangpo is guiding us in how to change our priorities, change our way of thinking, change our way of thinking from this ordinary way where our mind is dominated by things of no real value, and rather to start to live a life of true meaning, and transform how we currently live and strive to become a being that can have great benefits in this life. We'll finish here then for this morning, and this afternoon then we'll come to the next practice of bodhisattvas, which is relying upon solitude. Okay. Thank you. Okay.